This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. When Mark Kurzum was a child, his father Alex told him stories of his childhood, his life in Russia as the son of a pig herder, and how he was later the elephant boy in a traveling circus. But there was one story he didn't tell. When he was 5 years old, Alex Kurzum saw his mother, his brother, and his baby sister murdered by Nazi death squads, along with many others from his village. He escaped into the woods, where he lived for months, scavenging berries to eat and clothes from the body of a dead soldier, until he found an unlikely group of protectors, a battalion of Latvian Nazis who adopted him as their own, as their mascot, unaware that the boy they saved was a Jew. Mark Kurzum didn't hear the true story of his father's childhood until he was an adult himself and then spent the better part of 6 years helping his father to retrace his lost history. Both Mark and his father join us today to talk about his new book, The Mascot. Later in the hour, we'll answer some of your questions about stem cell research. If you have questions about reports of breakthroughs and the ethical, scientific, and medical implications, you can send us an email now. That's talk@npr.org. But first, the mascot. If you want to talk with Mark and Alex Kurzum, or if the war forced you to live a secret life, give us a call. 800-989-8255 is the phone number. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Mark Kurzum is the author of The Mascot, Unraveling the Mystery of My Jewish Father's Nazi Boyhood, and he joins us from BBC Studios in Oxford, England. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
You were already a graduate student there in Oxford when your father made an unexpected trip to visit you from his home in Australia, and he told you two words, Koidanov and Panok. What did they mean?
Well, it took us some time to unravel their meaning. At first, obviously, I had no idea. It took about 6 months of research to locate Koidanov as the pre-war Russian name of a town that was renamed Zhezhinsk, and it's about 20 miles south-west of Minsk, the capital of Belarus.
Then part of the Soviet Union.
That's right, yes.
Panok?
Panok took a lot longer to unravel. I suspected it was a name, but in fact couldn't find the meaning for over a year. And in the end, we found it was the name generally of an extended Jewish Belarusian family, and that it possibly was the name of my father's best friend when he was a very small child in the village of Koidanov.
And Koidanov is the village where, at least records show, there was a massacre similar to the one your father witnessed.
Yes, exactly. And this massacre happened under circumstances that very similar to those of my father's very impressionistic memory of a massacre occurring in which he lost his mother, brother and sister, and friends, neighbors, and members of his extended family.
There's an extraordinary moment in the book where he says this must be a memory. He can't imagine what it was could have otherwise been, but he remembers looking and seeing other people from the village looking on as the massacre happened, as the Jews were shot and bayoneted to death, looking on as if this was a sporting contest.
Yes, it's a very unfortunate memory, but clearly it was in wartime. We later found the date in late 1941, 21st of October, in fact, of 1941, and it was an extermination of the Jewish population that was taking place from Koidanov and Jews from Koidanov and from surrounding smaller villages. And the observers were non-Jewish members of the population.
And then an extraordinary part of an extraordinary story. This was in the fall. If everybody's accounts square up, your father, then 5 years old, going into the forests of Belarus in no more than a light sweater and a pair of shorts, survived one of the bitterest winters on record.
Yes, he survived. I mean, obviously he was begging and perhaps and foraging for food and did receive some help from isolated forest dwellers, etc. And he survived, by all accounts, until May, June of 1942 alone.
Survived in part through the, I guess, unintended generosity of a dead soldier who provided him with socks and boots and an overcoat.
That's right. Oversized boots tied around his thin ankles, a heavy woolen overcoat that he managed to get off the soldier's body and wrapped himself in. And he continued on his way foraging till the climate changed, till it warmed.
And then he was captured, turned over to a Latvian police unit who, in fact, were people carrying out executions of Jews.
That's right. He was passed by a, I don't know what word you'd use, a woodsman who suspected that he was Jewish, that my father was Jewish, and took him to a schoolyard where some Jews, or partisans, as the soldiers often called them, were being rounded up to be shot. And my father was tossed into the queue, and by means that he'll probably tell you of, he became isolated from the other people waiting to be assassinated, and he was spared.
He was spared by a sergeant named Kulis. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
That's right, Sergeant Kulis, Jakobs Kulis.
Yeah. As far as we know, this man, Sergeant Kulis, is the only one who would learn over the next several years that your father was Jewish.
Exactly. Sergeant Kulis definitely ascertained that my father was Jewish. He examined him.
He was circumcised, which at that time, in that place, meant you were Jewish.
Exactly. And but as for other people, they may have suspected, but never confirmed the fact that my father was Jewish.
And after a brief period where he was unclear as to whether he would be accepted or not, he was adopted as this unit's mascot, accompanied them on their patrols through the forests, accompanied them as he saw them as they rounded up a bunch of Jews, crowded them into a synagogue, and burned it down.
Yes, yes. He witnessed a number of atrocities, but that above all else remains indelibly imprinted in his memory.
A couple of people escaped that burning building and were shot to death by, among others, his hero and protector, Sergeant Kulis.
That's right, according to my father's recollection.
And at that point, as you're listening to this story from your father, this man you've known your whole life, you have to be looking at him and saying, who is this person?
Yes, that was definitely the situation. I wavered in and out of, I suppose, another consciousness altogether, in which I saw this man before me as a stranger. Who is this man? What has this man experienced beyond my worst nightmares, worst dreams? It was a very difficult process to survive, to negotiate and keep one's sanity, if you like.
Were there moments as you did the investigation where you wondered whether your father was in fact delusional, whether he was making at least some of this up?
I had to do some almost mental safety checks for myself. I had to tell myself perhaps the skeleton of this is true, but memory and time has embellished what my father remembers. The pain of going back has dramatized it beyond the way it was. What is this all about? I had no idea why. What was happening? It was literally left me dumbfounded, and still does in many ways.
toward the end of the war, Sergeant Kulis and the unit he was with turned your father over to a wealthy family in Riga, the capital of Latvia. The father of the family was in charge of the local chocolate factory there, and they more or less adopted your father as the son he had always wanted, clearly knowing that he was not Jewish. And eventually, through a long process, they, after the war, emigrated to Australia, which took your father along with them, and that's where you were born many years later.
That's right. That's right. I'd like to make a couple of corrections. We'll never know for sure whether that family knew that my father was Jewish or not. I don't know whether in later years, more information came out about my father, whether Jacob Skoulis spoke to other people, other individuals, confided in them, my father's religious and ethnic identity. But nonetheless, the family took my father on and looked after him very, very well indeed, cared for him as their own son.
The irony, wealthy people who were clearly living alongside the Nazis, if they were not collaborators themselves, and a Latvian SS man, your father's protectors.
Yes, it is the ultimate irony, isn't it?
We're talking with Mark Kurzum about his new book, The Mascot. It tells the story of his father, Alex Kurzum, who will join us next. We'll also take your calls, 800-989-8255, if you'd like to talk with Mark and Alex Kurzum about their remarkable story. You can also send us an email. That address is talk@npr.org. You can check out what other listeners have to say on our blog. That's at npr.org/blog of the nation. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In a few minutes, NPR science correspondent Joe Palca will join us to take your questions about stem cell research. If you have questions about reports of breakthroughs and the ethical, scientific, and medical implications, you can send us an email now, talk@npr.org, and stay with us. Right now, The Mascot, Mark Kurzum's story of unraveling the mystery of his Jewish father's Nazi boyhood. We have an excerpt from his book at npr.org/talk. If you'd like to speak with Mark Kurzum or with his father, Alex, or if the war forced you to live a secret life, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Mark's father, Alex, still lives in Melbourne, Australia, where he moved after the war. Alex Kurzum joins us from the studios of the Australian Broadcasting Company in Melbourne. Welcome. We appreciate your staying up late to speak with us.
Thank you. It's rather early.
It's rather early. You. Okay, one way or the other.
Okay.
We've heard a little bit about your extraordinary story. How much of it did you remember over the years before you started to speak at that late date with your son Mark?
I remembered most of it. It just was locked away, and I never brought it up to my memory. I sort of just had it in my background, and I knew what's happened approximately, but I wasn't quite sure where and when.
Why did you speak about it with no one?
Well, when I left continent Europe for Australia in end of 49, I made up my mind that part of my life was a black spot, and I said, forget it. If you want to start a new life, you got to forget the past and try to, because you'll never live a normal life thinking about it all the time.
You moved to Australia with your adopted family from Riga. Did you never speak with them about this?
Never, ever. They knew I had been with the soldiers, but I didn't know how I got there. Hmm.
One of the things that you remembered vividly was being in uniform as a young man. At various points, you were dressed by these soldiers in their police uniform, then later a Wehrmacht, an army uniform, and then finally in an SS uniform.
Yes, that's right. They change uniforms quite frequently, and whatever the adult soldiers got their uniforms, I got a little new one made for me, too.
Did you think of, you were a young boy at the time, it's impossible, I guess, to ask these questions, but did you think of what was going on, of the terrible symbolism of that?
I really didn't understand it fully. I knew there was a war on. I didn't understand who was fighting whom and what it was all about. No one told me, and at that age, unless someone tells you what's happening, it's hard for you to guess it all.
You tell your son Mark in the book, though, when you saw atrocities being committed, you knew there were bad things going on.
Oh, yes, I knew definitely bad things going on, but there's not very much I could do about it, so I just witnessed it. I turned my head and saw dreadful things happening, but I knew that I couldn't do much about it.
Of course you couldn't do much about it. You were just a little boy at the time. Nevertheless, you repeatedly tell your son Mark in the book that you felt guilty because at one point the soldiers use you to lure young women toward them, women who later end up being raped.
Well, at the time I didn't understand what was really happening to those people. I thought that was just like a game playing, you know. But later on in life I understood that the consequences of my involvement in that particular part.
Let's see if we can get some listeners on the line to ask you some questions. Our guests are Alex Curzum, who you just heard, and his son Mark Curzum, who's the author of the new book, The Mascot, Unraveling the Mystery of My Jewish Father's Nazi Boyhood. Our number is 800-989-8255. Let's begin with Ellen. Ellen with us from Santa Rosa in California.
Hi, thank you for having me. I know this is a very personal and painful question, but I was led to believe that it was so dangerous for young children because, especially boys, they couldn't hide that they were circumcised. And I was wondering how this experience related to yours being adopted by a non-Jewish family.
Alex Curzum?
Yes. Well, I had to be aware every moment of the day that no one discovered who I was. Only one man knew, and he told me to keep it a secret, and I knew that if they unraveled my secret, I would be dead. So that played on my mind all the years I was with the soldiers, and everywhere afterwards, I had to hide my Jewishness all the time, which was hard to do sometimes.
There are descriptions in the book of scenes where one of the other soldiers, not Sergeant Kulis, who knew, but one of the other soldiers is trying to make you take a bath and you struggle to hold on to your underwear. And again, the same thing when your new adopted sister, being very nice, trying to give you a bath and you, too, hold on to your pants.
That's
well,
right.
Thank you. I'll go offline now. I'm really happy that you survived this horrible ordeal. And thanks for sharing it with us.
Thanks for the call, Alan. Let's see if we can go now to, this is John. John's with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This is an incredible saga, and you are an incredibly powerful and strong boy and man, both spiritually and mentally. I wanted to find out, when you were taken by this wealthy family and moved to Australia, did you practice any kind of religion with this family?
Yes, I went along to the Lutheran or the Protestant church and participated in their functions.
And do you consider yourself a Lutheran today?
I really don't know who I am. All I know is I was born in the Jewish faith. I was brought up in a Protestant family, but I married a Catholic girl. So here I am.
John?
That's absolutely incredible, and I hope someday you can embrace the Jewish faith again. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Igor. Igor is with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Thank very well,
you
thanks.
For my call.
Sure.
I just have a question. I'm myself originally from Russia. I just moved here from eight years ago, and I'm Jewish as well. I'm just wondering, I mean, it's amazing the story, and I had a lot of, you know, my grandmother went through the 9 months of in St. Petersburg of being blocked, you know, by Germans. And I'm just amazed.
The Siege of Leningrad, as it was known then, yes.
Yeah, as Leningrad is known then, yes. I'm just wondering what makes you to write this book, and I guess the question, why did you say it now and not earlier to write that book?
I guess that's at least in part a question to Mark Kurzum. Why write the book, Mark?
To Mark as well.
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Because once I knew the truth about my father's past, and as you do, you tell people, close friends and others, about aspects of his history. So many people were captivated by it and moved by it, his story. I decided that I wanted to, you know, make notes about it, and I felt it was a story worth telling, a record of a rather unique human experience.
There was first a documentary film in Australia, correct?
Sorry?
Was there not a film also produced in Australia?
Yes, I co-produced a documentary film also entitled The Mascot. But for various reasons, I was dissatisfied with the outcome, and I felt that written language would provide a much more textured and a richer portrayal of what had affected my father during his childhood.
And Alex Kurzum, let me ask you, the documentary film and the book, which have already been released, of course, in Australia, have not been universally well received. What do you think of the response?
So far it's been great. I've been to a few countries now and followed the results, and they've been very, very well received.
Yet some people are upset with this information.
Oh, well, you can't please everybody. The truth came out, and so some are upset and some are happy. You can't please everybody.
Igor, thanks very much for the call.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm definitely going to buy a book, and I just want to read it. It's amazing. Thank you.
Thanks. Let's go now to, this is Ed, and Ed's with us from Portland in Oregon.
Hi. I'm actually curious. I obviously haven't read the book yet, and maybe the book answers the question, but I'm curious if you ever found out, obvious question more for Mark, if you ever found out what happened to the officer that took your father in.
There were several key military officials. Sergeant Kulis, who we mentioned, there was also a Commander Loba, I think. Sorry. I'm pronouncing that correctly, who was his superior. Mark Kurzum, what happened to them?
Commander Loba's fate, I gather he died peacefully in Stockholm. I found him in the early 1980s and went to visit him. But, of course, Commander Lobe died with a firm belief in the validity of his actions on behalf of the Latvian nation, even though there were some shadows hanging over his reputation as a soldier and possibly a war criminal. Both he and his wife were living, as I said, in anonymity in Stockholm, and died peacefully in the 1980s. Sergeant Kulis, I tracked a potential Sergeant Kulis to New York, a suburb in New York called Belmont Park.
Mm-hmm.
But I could not proceed further with my investigations, and the search tailed off.
In general, to your knowledge, was anyone specifically convicted in war crimes trials after the war of the atrocity that your father witnessed, the massacre of his mother, brother, and sister, and the rest of the Jews from his village?
No. By recent years, some of the soldiers my father were with were members of what later became the 18th Battalion, 18th Latvian Battalion. And there's an ongoing historical controversy as to whether members of the 18th Battalion participated in certain of the atrocities in Belarus, certain of the very significant massacres that took place there. And I gather most historians believe that the evidence is conclusively against those soldiers. There was a show trial, an alleged show trial of some members of the 18th Battalion who remained in the Soviet Union after the war. But there's also a very firm sort of block of Latvian historians and neo-nationalists who argue that the 18th Battalion had nothing to do with these massacres.
We're speaking with Mark and Alex Kurzum. Mark is the author of a new book called The Mascot, which tells the story of his Jewish father's Nazi boyhood. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Ari. Ari's with us from Denver in Colorado.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I wanted to ask the father a question. I'm just about to graduate as a psychotherapist from a master's degree, and I'm very curious about what sort of things he felt gave him the strength to get through all of the trauma that he experienced and that he saw and made him able to be able to live a life after that.
Yes. Alex Kurzum.
Yes. I don't know what made me, but I desperately wanted to live, and I had no future. But I was desperate, I wanted desperate to live, and so every day I took as a bonus in the evening when I climbed a tree to sleep in it. I wake up in the morning, I go and get some food from a nearby place, and I wanted on. So my aim was to just carry on day by day, but I wanted desperate to live. I don't know why, what pushed me.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's a very inspiring story.
Thank you, Ari. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Amber. Amber with us from Kalamazoo in Michigan.
Hi, it's a pleasure to speak with you, and this issue is just a moving story. My question is for Alex, and I was wondering if he knows why the Nazi officers took him in, and if he doesn't, if he has any speculation on this or guess as to why they spared him.
Well, I really have no answer for it. The only thing that I think saved me, I didn't look like a Jewish boy. I looked like more a Russian or a German or blonde and blue eyes. And I think the soldiers took pity on me, but I don't know why. I really have no answer. I've always asked the question myself, why me, why me? But I got no answer for it.
Amber, thanks very much. Good question.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's go to Zachary. Zachary with us from Denver in Colorado.
Hi, your story is very inspiring. Thanks for sharing it with us. I was curious now how you feel about the Germans and if you have any relationships with anybody German at this point in your life.
Yes, I do quite a bit with, as a matter of fact, my middle son is married into a German family, and I have nothing against, as a matter of fact, I've never hated anybody, German, Latvian, Russian. I don't know, I didn't understand hate, so I've never been bitter to anybody.
Does that include Sergeant Kulis, the man obviously who saved you and protected you and made it possible for you to be alive and to give life to Mark and your other children? But nevertheless, a man who you saw murder Jews.
Yeah, but he was good to me. That's all I counted on. He was good to me. He protected me, dressed me, gave me food. What did I know? What else was going on?
Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
And Alex Kurzum, we can't thank you enough for taking the trouble to get up so early in the morning to join the conversation. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Alex Kurzum joined us from the studios of the Australian Broadcasting Company in Melbourne, Australia. Our thanks as well to Mark Kurzum. Appreciate your time today.
You're welcome.
Mark Curzon's book is The Mascot, Unraveling the Mystery of My Jewish Father's Nazi Boyhood. He joined us today from the BBC studios at Radio Oxford. When we come back, we're going to be talking with NPR's Joe Palca, questions and answers on the scientific breakthrough for stem cells. If you have questions about the medical, ethical, or scientific implications, give us a call, 800-989-8255, or you can zap us an email, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.